Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus free professional installation right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Once upon a dismal day, Bob's ice cream van looked gloomy and gray. Although he had big ambitions, his socials lacked creative vision.
That bad?
Maybe vamp it up a tad?
I have an idea.
Bob launched Canva and got into gear.
Create the video in the vampire theme and make it the funniest meme.
It went viral. Bob's business, a revival. Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Good morning, everybody. You got to do it with the song especially. You got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
I mean, you do it every day, though.
I do.
It's kind of your thing.
But when the song comes on, you're like, all right, I got to, you know, can't take the day off. You got to really reach another level, you know.
I'll just know
no
that I'll be.
No days off.
No days off.
Don't blink.
Stop.
Such a good clip. Don't blink. Cut your eyelids off. So good. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a beautiful Thursday morning. Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've got the Sabres tonight at 7. They're at home. They take on the St. Louis Blues. I almost said Columbus Blue Jackets. St. Louis Blues, who are not a good hockey team.
No, they're not.
They probably should pick up a win. We'll see, depending on the injuries and everything they've got going on there. But they play tonight at 7, 6 p.m. pregame. We've also got Thursday night football, Denver hosting the Raiders. Raiders also a bad team. Denver should take care of them. That probably shouldn't be that too difficult of a process for them.
You know what's really cool, though, by the way?
Hmm.
I'm really kind of like fishing for the bottom of the barrel for this sort of thing. The Buffalo Sabres are not in last place in the
Atlantic. There you go. So it even makes tonight more important. Florida, I believe, right?
Yes, you are right. It is Florida of all teams.
Giddy up. I mean, they're also dealing with a plethora of injuries, so that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Sabres have the second most overtime losses this year. Colorado is 5.
Really?
They're 8-1-5.
No, yeah, they just refuse to lose in regulation.
Apparently.
That's a talented team. It's a good team. So, yeah, we've got the Sabres tonight. We'll talk to Paul Hamilton at 11:30 to get ready for tonight. They've got a lot of injuries. Also a lot of injuries. The Bills, 6 players don't practice yesterday. 3 of them were limited. We'll talk to Sal in about a half hour at 10:30. On that, though, Derek, the amount of injuries the Bills have. I was thinking about this last night on the nightcap of, like, where am I at with this? They're 6-2. I don't want to panic too much with some of the injuries, although a few of them are alarming. Cook, Bosa, Benford also was not mentioned earlier before practice. Epinesa is dealing with concussion. And maybe this is me just really looking past Miami. But I'm not getting too worried about it. I don't know if I should be. Maybe I should. I mean, they've got, you know, what 10 guys on the injury report. Maybe I should be a little bit more worried. 9 guys, whatever. But I'm kind of just not. And again, I think I'm maybe overlooking Miami because of their current situation and the history that the Bills have had with Josh Allen against that team. But I don't know. I'm not that worried yet.
I also think Baltimore kind of cuts any excuses you would have out of the situation. The amount of injuries that team has had this year, and they beat the brakes off of Miami.
Yeah, like they got Lamar back and it was over.
So, yeah, no, you should be able to do the same thing.
I think even San Francisco all year. San Francisco keeps winning games, and they're rotating quarterbacks, and they've got key guys going out, year-ending injuries kind of deal for Nick Bosa. So, I guess it's where I'm at, too. Like, it's sort of as long as Allen's playing, I think they should win. So I'm left here sitting like, I'm not that worried. But, man, how important James Cook has been to them. And just how good of a year he's having.
Yes.
There's a little bit of concern. It's also still just Wednesday. I mean, we'll talk to Sal and kind of get his idea
We have seen what the Bills are when they're not at their top form running the football. And they've lost 2 games from it. So, yeah, there's going to be an inherent worry there. If Cook's not healthy, can you run the football in Miami? And if you can't run the football, are you winning the football game? Because so far this season, you've proven if you can't answer yes to that last question, it's not going to go well.
Right. And that has been their struggle, is that when the run game going, they look nearly unstoppable. They can beat almost anybody, even with the passing game not looking the best. When they don't, and the turnover start and stuff, a lot has to go wrong for them to lose. They can sometimes compound it for 2 straight losses. They've done that 7, 8, 9 straight years. I mean, it even predates McDermott. Mainly because of the drought. But that's typically what they do, and then they rebound. And the last 2 weeks, I think, have easily been their best performances. But I guess the only thing I do get worried about is just how many injuries they picked up. And, of course, they don't make a move at the deadline. On that, I think somewhat surprisingly, we did hear from Brandon Bean yesterday. He spoke for almost a half hour. I was fully prepared not to hear from Bean. And I wouldn't have, you know, begrudged him if he didn't. They didn't make a move. You didn't add anybody. There's no one you're going to talk about. Okay, fine.
As a matter of fact, I made mention you're either going to talk and people are not going to like it, or you're going to talk about how you felt comfortable with the roster and people weren't going to like it, or that you were going to talk about not getting it done and people weren't going to like it. And either way, they're not going to like what you said. But he went out there and he spoke, and to his credit, he was, I think, the right level of irritated for somebody who didn't get something done. Went back to, yeah, you moved money around for a reason, and that reason didn't happen. So, yeah, he's a little ticked that he didn't get anything done there because he wanted to. You don't move that money because you don't want to make a deal happen. And it didn't go the way he wanted it to. Perfectly fine with that. I like that he spoke. I also like that he still says probably everything that fans disagree with at this point, though, of – you know, I'm not here to be too reckless. People that want to trade like the higher picks, like the first, a second, or a third. Yes, I know the Bills' drafting history hasn't been consistent with that under Bean, but that's how you form cores. It's how you add to them, is by hitting those picks. Again, the consistency is not there.
This year, though, has actually looked very good.
This year's group has looked good. Well, save for the third round pick. But again, my point being here, if you're in cap trouble, how do you fix it? Drafting well.
Mm-hmm.
How do you draft well? By having picks and not overspending them for deadline players. Like, so him saying that he doesn't want to be reckless kind of sits in sync with the fact that they didn't overpay for somebody. They didn't overpay for Jakobi Meyers. Like, I'm okay with that.
See, I will say, though, listen to him yesterday. It sounded like, sure, they maybe were talking about Jakobi Meyers.
It sounded like they were going bigger than that.
And it sounds like they were frustrated, like we all were, that they were in the same division as Miami and the Jets.
Just as I said.
And I will say, though, I'm a little surprised he outright said that he was really trying hard to trade in the division, because that would point to where, yeah, don't be reckless, but also I was willing to give up a first pick, a first round pick for somebody. And that would point to Garrett Wilson or Jalen Waddle, because I don't think they had anyone on defense the Bills would have gone for that they would have been aggressive for. Maybe Quinn and Williams, but Miami certainly not.
Minka? Safety depth?
Maybe. But I looked at it as Garrett Wilson and Jalen Waddle, who would have been cheap enough for them to bring onto the roster and also would have been part of the core still. It would have been one of those moves that Bean has done before, bringing in a 25, 26-year-old receiver.
Maybe he was
in. Will give the extension to, or inherit the extension.
Maybe he was in on Quinn and Williams.
Maybe. It's nice to hear that they were aggressive, but it only goes so far because, yeah, they didn't make a move. The nice thing from yesterday, or the easy thing, is that after sleeping on it was, okay, no one else really made a move in the AFC outside of the Colts. And kind of depending on who you are, that was way too much for a player like Sauce Gardner. Mm-hmm. And it really could hurt them in the years going forward, especially if Daniel Jones does turn back into a pumpkin. They've lost their next two first-round picks. They will not have the ammunition to go into the draft and potentially get the replacement if that is to occur. But Now that the days have gone on, you know, we're past the deadline. We are now fully on to Miami and the later half of the season. The Bills are still a Super Bowl contending team. And the reason why I bring up, you know, the good we're seeing from the rookie class of the young players is it points to, okay, they might be getting better as the year goes on. Max Harrison has only played, in terms of snaps, probably a full game now. I mean, of course, he has played in the last two games. But in terms of snaps, he's still working his way up to eventually overtaking Tre'Davious White. Cole Bishop is finally seemingly starting to get underneath him, and we just saw his best game as a Bill. Deion Walker has been a force from day one for the Bills. Jackson Hawes has been great in their three tight end sets. We'll see what the post-bye week looks like for Josh Palmer. Hopefully he's back this week. I'd love to see what they have cooking for him, because it felt like against Atlanta, they were going to have a big game plan for him. And that's a thing that I've thought about a lot, is if he doesn't get hurt and Palmer goes out there and has six catches for 120 and a touchdown, that seemed to be the trajectory he was on to start that game early.
Mm-hmm.
Has the mood maybe changed a little bit on receiver? And it kind of just more becomes, okay, I need more from Keon specifically rather than I need more from the receivers.
Right. There is a lot to it. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of things that need to be looked into. But I do think at the end of the day, they are 6-2, despite the fact that there are crippling injuries that have gone on through the lineup with them. They are still chasing, but very much in the conversation of not just the division, but the one seed. Despite the two-week stretch where they drop a pair of games. Are they going to run the table? No. I would be a fool to predict that. Should they beat Miami, though? I wouldn't be a fool to predict that, even with everything, because Miami has been as bad as they've been.
And Chop Robinson, it's pointing to he won't even play either, so one of their best defensive players left may not even play.
On a bad defense, one of the best players that they have left. And again, division games get wonky. We've seen it already a couple times, including with Miami. The Jets obviously being the exemption to the rule. But how this team manages to respond when things don't look so good is a consistent factor with them. They always do seem to find their way to bounce back. November is usually where they play some of their best football. November, especially into December. This is where they find their way again, typically. There's that one season where they're as low as 6-6. We don't talk about that one. That one was weird.
They did find their way, though.
But they ultimately find their way. Is it going to be a year that we can actually see the Bills break through? Even that can still be answered a maybe, because the rest of the AFC has question marks all over it. It just doesn't feel like it, because you've seen all these injuries happen. You've seen the inconsistency with this team. But yet at the same time, across the league, it's happening to everybody. It's weird, and I feel like it is kind of a soft response to the worries, almost like a cop-out. But that's where I'm at this point, is I believe in the Bills' opportunities here because everyone else kind of stinks too.
That's where I've been at the last few weeks. I mean, yeah. I've been slow to give my flowers to Daniel Jones and the Colts. I've kind of gotten there now, and of course, as I get there,
they
just get destroyed by by Pittsburgh. So for me, where I'm at with the Bills, and I mentioned this the other day with the Sabres, where I kind of have different wavelengths with both of them when it comes to picks and trading everything and all that stuff. The Sabres, I'm at a frustration level where I'm just like, yeah, I don't care about prospects anymore. I have prospect fatigue, right? We talk about that all the time with them. Like, don't give me any kind of random names that sound like made up people. I don't care. Don't give me their weird stats. I don't care. I want the Sabres to be good now, today. So I'm more willing to get aggressive, to trade away their top-end prospects, a first-round pick, right? Like, I didn't want them drafting last year or this past draft. I wanted that first-round pick gone.
Yep.
Where the Bills, I'm a little more, I don't even want to say patient. I would say cautious. And in part, it's because they are doing things correctly. They make the playoffs every year. They have a chance every year. They just got to get it right once. Mm-hmm. And you never know. They could get it right once, and all of a sudden, everything starts clicking. It could be this year where all of a sudden, Deion Walker, Max Harrison, and Jackson Hawes, and let's see about TJ Sanders, all play pivotal roles for them as a rookie class, and that pushes them over the edge. Maybe. I've gotten a point, and it's why I've been so impatient this year, and I've had to kind of fight urges to get more upset and what have you, is because I do think they're doing everything correctly, or most things correctly, I should say. They just need to finish. They just need to get the championship. You have some teams that sort of rush the process and just, oh, okay, they're good now. Like Detroit, like 3-4 years, and they're all of a sudden NFC champions, best in the NFC. Here they go. And if they don't have injuries on the defense, they're probably in the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
They lost almost their entire starting defense at times last year, namely their best player, Aiden Hutchinson. But they're sort of right back to where they are. The Rams surprise kind of everybody and now sort of live by that mantra, even though they don't really do that anymore, actually.
They don't do it anymore. They paid a couple years price.
They did it once, missed the playoffs the next year, and then hit in the draft by getting Jared Verse and Braden Fisk. And it like kind of it retooled their defense. You know, they nail a fifth-round pick in Puka Nacua. They got hot in the draft. And that's a big thing of this is, look, I'm not saying never to trade anything. I was big on wanting a trade. I wanted some excitement.
Right.
But a lot of these teams, like, that's what they built through. They built through the draft. The Eagles are a little weird. They made 3 moves this year. We'll see how much any of them work. We'll see how that goes with them because they're also not a perfect team by any means.
But yet a lot of the damage that they do is through the draft. Howie Roseman lands star players through drafts, and it's mixed with that aggression.
You know what I thought about with them, though? And where, again, the Michael Hoyt injury is going to just linger with me forever because I was excited about him. The first seven quarters we see of him were great, and that's it. Like that's what we're going to have for the rest of the season into the offseason is those 7 quarters, Carolina and half of and most of Kansas City, where he looked like a force. Speaking of the Eagles, you know who I thought of, though? Zach Bond, who they signed to a 1-year deal last year. Kind of a nothing linebacker. Again, 1-year deal from New Orleans, and then he's an all-pro linebacker when he gets to the Philadelphia Eagles. They figured out how they wanted to use him, and they used him perfectly. I'm not saying Hoyt was obviously going to be a first-team all-pro edge rusher, but you can't tell me as a Bills fan you didn't watch those 7 quarters and go, man, if he wasn't suspended for 6 games, we might be having a very different conversation about who Michael Hoyt is at this point of the season.
And we also might not be talking about how they lose against one of the either Patriots or Falcons.
Because of how different the defense looked with him in there.
How different it looks. I think more New England, less Atlanta.
Right.
That game, the offense was just so out of sync.
Whereas against the offense really kind of cost them in Atlanta, yeah.
Whereas against New England, it was an ugly first half, and I'm being nice. But Drake May dominating through the air probably gets a little less probable when you have another player in that pass rush that is helping to stabilize it.
I think absolutely. I just there's a few points here in this season. I'm already sitting here going, if we just zigged instead of zagged, if an injury didn't happen here, and it like just a small one, or an not season ending, but it's going to be a little while, how different are we looking at things? Max Harrison, through two games, has looked great for the Bills. I think he had one of the better coverage rates last week against Kansas City. And if he got all of training camp, I'm sorry, the current Max Harrison we're looking at is starting over Trey White week one.
Yes.
If the rest of training camp goes, the guy we're looking at right now, I fully believe that. So how different does some of these matchups look when you have a super speedy cornerback that also seems to be very sticky on wide receivers early? How different does your secondary look? Which was already, by the way, very good to start the year because everyone could run on you.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, if you got him there, I've had periods this year already where I've felt very doomer and stuff like that, and I've been very frustrated with them and what have you.
Right.
But they're 6-2. I don't really feel there's a great team in the NFL this year. I like the Rams a lot. I really don't think they do much wrong. But like a team like the Eagles, I think are very Jekyll and Hyde, where one day, they look unstoppable. They look like a future dynasty. And the very next week, I'm like, you won the Super Bowl last year? You blew them out? Really? That happened? And mainly I look at the AFC. Even with the wide receiver issues that they maybe have, I can look to the Bills' biggest example, the one that they are trying to be, Kansas City. They won a Super Bowl with guys like Sky Moore and Juju Smith-Schuster and Kadarius Toney playing major roles in their offense. The Bills can get there. And again, when I look at the AFC, Baltimore is going to scrape and claw to get into a playoff spot. It did not help them that Pittsburgh won against Indy.
No.
It did not help them. Kansas City is 5-4. And
currently,
man,
out of the playoffs.
And man, I know the Bills are playing Tampa that week, but another game I'm going to be wanting to watch almost every snap is going to be Denver and Kansas City. Kansas City off the bye at, not Mile High anymore, but at Denver. Because we are getting to a point where Kansas City's not going to win every time, all the time. They're just not. They're not going to make every single Super Bowl. And you've got Cincinnati being Cincinnati. Not even just Burrow's health, but the fact that Joe Flacco can go out there and throw 470 and lose is just – that's the Bengals. That's who they are. You know, the Colts, still Daniel Jones. And a part of me is sitting there going, I'll take that matchup. I'll take that matchup 10 times out of 10. Until he is a proven commodity 2-3 years down the road, that's probably where I'm going to sit. Denver even though their defense freaks me out, I'd probably take that matchup. Baltimore, healthy, is maybe the only team where I sit here and go, I don't know how the Bills match up against them in the AFC. I don't really like that matchup. Everybody else, bring it on. A trade would have been nice. It would have been nice to bolster a defense that has picked up a lot of injuries. But we took a lot of calls, and I've heard a lot of calls on the other shows here on the station. I think bringing up very good points of, outside of Von Miller, who's the big trade acquisition a team made midseason that propelled them to a Super Bowl? It's not many. One I think of that really did good work for his team but didn't lead to a Super Bowl, Amari Cooper going to Dallas from the Raiders. I think that's another one that I think of where he just slotted in and, oh my goodness, he's incredible. But many of them, I think the one I was really looking for in all actuality was like a fifth-round pick to an edge rusher. I brought Carl Granderson. Where I was like, just get more bodies on the defensive line. Because personally, and I'm not at practice, I don't know their plan, but I don't trust Landon Jackson. And Javon Solomon, I don't really know what he's bringing, so bring me in the guy that's got 4.5 sacks this year, right?
Yeah, it's to a point where Jackson, despite so many injuries, Landon Jackson can't see the lineup. And when he has drawn into games, he has yet to record a statistic this year.
Yeah, I don't even know he's out there. You just don't know he's out there.
And we'll see what happens, obviously, going forward with him, be it this year and in seasons coming up. But it does look like a mighty type of miss early on there, that you got a guy that can't even record a tackle.
Yeah, not ideal. It does help, though, the early signs. Max Harrison, great for them through two games, and Deion Walker looks to be one of the best steals late that we've seen in a long time. For a Bills team that gets good quality players late in drafts, Deion Walker already looks to be kind of one of the better ones they've gotten. 803-0550, the number to call. As I mentioned, Sal Capaccio on in just a few minutes here. We'll have him from 10:30 to about 11. And then Paul Hamilton with Sabres in action tonight at home against St. Louis. He'll be on with us at 11:30. Before we do take our first time out, though, I do want to mention, if you've seen it on social media or in the last little while here, it was announced about 30 to 40 minutes ago, Cowboys edge rusher Marshawn Nyland has passed away at the age of 24. His agent and the Cowboys have announced that. We'll bring any new information we do have on that. He was a second-round pick by Dallas last year, and you may also remember hearing the name very recently, as on Monday Night Football, he was the one that recovered the blocked punt for a touchdown. Just tragic. Tragic. 24 years old. Really don't know any more information on this as of now. We'll get you that as it comes in. But so far, the team and his agent have announced that he died at the age of 24 last night. It was announced this morning. 803-0550. Again, the number. Sal Capaccio joins the show when we come back. You're listening to WGR.
You know, we try and build this roster to not need a trade, okay? Because these guys are learning the playbook, especially...
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of...
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus free professional installation right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1. It's $15 a month. 2. Seriously, it's $15 a month. 3. No big contrast. 4. I use it. 5. My mom uses it.
Are you playing me off?
That's what's happening, right? Okay. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
They had a wide position of wide receiver. They're learning that all spring, assuming you got them in the spring or you've had them before. And that playbook is being built up, and then game plans are pulled off of that each week by your opponent. And so it's not as easy as, hey, trade for player receiver X, drop him in, and he's just going to run with the rest of them.
Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean from yesterday. It was a busy day over at One Bills Drive. Before that, Sean McDermott spoke. We got our first injury report as the game week gets underway. Bills going to take on the Miami Dolphins down in South Florida on Sunday. And for more on a busy day yesterday, Sal Capaccio does join us on the Wester Hotline. Sal, how we doing, man?
Good, guys. Good morning to you.
So where should we start? We've got six players that didn't practice yesterday due to injuries, or we have been talking for almost a half hour. So we've got a lot to get to.
How about we start with Bean and just kind of rewind yesterday before we move on to today's practice, if we'll do it that way. You know what I mean?
Perfect.
And kind of get collect our thoughts on all of that, because first it was Sean McDermott. He spoke yesterday, his normal Wednesday media briefing ahead of practice, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But he spoke about the trade deadline as well. He was asked some questions about it. And then obviously Brandon Bean. And, you know, I came away, my biggest thing that I came away with was I think the Bills felt they had something in the hopper that didn't happen. Whatever that was, I'm not sure. It wasn't just, hey, we think we're going to do something. We don't know what it is. Like, they had something planned that they thought they were going to do, right? I don't think that there was any – I think for them it was more of a, okay, let's just get this across the finish line. And it never happened. And I don't know what that would be. You know, we're never going to – maybe we'll know someday, but he's not going to reveal that at any point with us yesterday. And the reason I say that is even thinking about – him saying, if I were a betting man in Vegas, I would have lost money on the Bills making a deal. Like, he's telling you right there, like, I would have bet on me making a trade. Mm-hmm. Well, he's controlling that, right? In some respects, half of it at least. So I think that's part of it right there. I think the other thing that I take away from it is, and the Bills believe, and I think rightfully so, that they have a championship roster. They have a chance to win a Super Bowl with the roster they have as currently constructed. It doesn't mean they couldn't get better. Doesn't mean they didn't try to get better. But as it is, they can still win a Super Bowl with the team that they have. And I don't think that's wrong to think.
No, I Sal, I totally agree with you. I mean, I mentioned it in the last segment with Derek here, too. Like, I know I've been at times this year very doomer and stuff like that. And I think in part of it, a lot of it is just the lack of patience. The patience is leaving me a little bit here, especially, you know, the years have gone on. They lose in very similar fashions, what have you. But they do things a lot of times the right way. They keep making the dance. They keep having shots at a Super Bowl, and they keep getting there. And this year looks to be no different. They're 6-2. They're right around the one seed with everybody else. They're in a good spot. Sal, I will tell you, the thing I found most interesting yesterday from Bean was two things. Really, one, he did seem agitated that he could not get something done. And I do enjoy the spot Bean. He is as candid as a GM seems to be able to be possible. And then two, he did seem to point a little bit that he tried, or at least was attempting to try, to get a deal done with one of the Jets or the Dolphins.
It did feel like that to me as well. I mean, he did mention specifically teams in the division, and they were reluctant to trade. And, you know, Jeremy this morning talked a lot about, you know, his trail of breadcrumbs led him to thinking that maybe Brian Thomas Jr. Mm-hmm. was a guy they were targeting. And maybe, I mean, I don't know. I understand, and I think it's, you know, a good theory and practice to kind of go through that and figure it out. I think was possibly one of the guys from the Jets on their radar was Garrett Wilson or even Quinnen Williams, a guy. But what kind of holds me back, that maybe they thought they could get, but then what holds me back is him when he says they were reluctant to trade, like when reluctant, how reluctant was it? Hey, we're not even going down that road because you are the Bills and you're in our division. Or was it, they were talking, and they got to a point where the Jets are like, we just can't do that. Like, that's just bad for us. It's bad optics. We're not going to help you out. Because if that were the case, then you start to think about maybe there were other deals to be made that they didn't make because they thought they could do that, right? The other thing that gets me to, I think that they were doing something, you know, he talked about Taron Johnson's restructure. Now, Brandon Bean said, and I'm glad because this is something I, you know, brought up the last couple of days, that the Taron Johnson restructure didn't have to be just about a trade. It could have been about the fact that they need operating costs. Now, when you have a guy go on IR in the NFL, there's no cap relief. It's not like the NHL, where the Vegas Knights do this all the time. They put a guy in IR, and they suddenly have a ton of cap.
I love it.
That's not how it works in the NFL. When a guy goes on IR, like Michael Hoyt or whoever, you don't get cap relief. It's his salary still counts. So but what you do have to do is count more on your cap when you replace him. A guy comes up the practice squad, he's suddenly on an NFL minimum contract salary, basically, like Fedarian Mathis. You sign a guy, of course, he's going to count. So what you do is you restructure Taron Johnson to have room not only this week, but next week and week 16 and 17 and 18 as the season goes on to be able to make those moves. The fact that they did it Monday, though, and not because you could do that anytime, the fact that they did it Monday, I think because of the trade deadline, there was a – in fact, I do think there was a deadline. He had mentioned a restructured deadline, but I do feel that he was doing it in case, and even said, in case he said this, in case a move came along, right? Mm-hmm. So they were ready to do something. And that's where I feel that Brandon Bean probably thought he had something he was going to do that didn't happen, and why he says, I was as mad as any fan going home.
All right, so now looking at the injuries here, Sal, there's a lot of them. I mean, it's just Wednesday, and we've talked about this a lot. It's to start the week, but six players not practicing, three players limited. Oh, boy.
Yeah, so the one that's really interesting today that we'll get more of a read on is Christian Benford, because when McDermott went through the list yesterday, he mentioned everybody but Christian Benford. And then Benford was on the injury report. So one of two things is pretty much possible here. Either Christian Benford got hurt during practice and he was limited because he started practice but didn't finish it, or, you know, was hobbled in some capacity. Or it's very possible, because this happens, that McDermott got the information after he spoke with us that maybe they're going to hold off on Benford because he was sore, something like that. Like, you could have that happen, right? It happens before. I mean, guys sometimes are full after he says they'll be limited, and guys sometimes are not practicing after he says he's limited, because that's just the conversation with the training staff when the player gets out there. Hey, I'm a little sore, I'm going to back off me today. Okay, and then we get information later. But that said, it's concerning, because this has happened a couple times where, like Ed Oliver, suddenly he's limited. You're like, what's going on? And, you know, he's in a walking boot, right? And that practice, I think maybe that's how it went down. Either way, you guys get the point. The other guys, Joey Bosa and James Cook, are the ones that you're like, two DNPs. Bosa with a wrist, and there's been some people trying to figure out what happened there in the game, and it goes all the way back maybe to Carolina from what people are looking at online and some of the play of that. And maybe if that's the case, I mean, he played all of the game against Kansas City. He spoke in the locker room after. So, you know, he finished the game. I'm not too concerned until we don't see him today. Same thing with James Cook. I think that injury is from the first series of the game, because, I mean, he finished the game and he spoke at the podium after. And it is possible he's sore. It's possible there's swelling or anything that could happen after a game. There's no doubt about that, but he didn't practice yesterday. And then, very surprisingly, AJ Epenesa in concussion protocol the day after a game, which does happen sometimes. So those are the three guys that kind of came by a surprise. No surprise, Taron Johnson, Daquan Jones, or Shaq Thompson all not practicing, but we'll see if they do today in any capacity. And then Joshua Palmer, good news on him, limited participant. So maybe they get him back this week after he did actually practice a little bit last week.
Sal, on those, and some of them don't belong in this, like AJ Epenesa with concussion, and, you know, he's obviously got to get treatment. I wonder, though, with the early bye, if maybe this is the Bills, you know, for some of these players, like a James Cook, like a Joey Bosa, where they could potentially be limited. They decide, no, you know, it's not a vet rest day, but we're just not going to have you practice today because of the long stretch now to wrap up the season with the early bye.
I agree. I mean, I think a lot of this is I don't want to use the word load management. It's not load management. It's managing bodies through the season. This is the long game. I think the Bills have played the long game all year. What's funny is about this, like, Bosa's the guy we thought about this, and he's been playing a ton of snaps, right?
Yeah.
But he's the guy we thought that they would be doing this with all year, and it hasn't really happened. But I do think they're playing the long game here, and they do have injuries, and they have to really think about what their team looks like going forward and how much they want to put on each guy and how they have to kind of manage the reps. So yeah, it's load management in the sense of not taxing them, but injuries and making sure that, hey, we got to get through this week. That's what Terrell Bernard was 2 weeks ago, guys. I mean, Terrell Bernard didn't play against Carolina. He dressed. He didn't play because they're like, hey, we don't really, I mean, if he has to play, we can put him out there, but let's give him another week. It's kind of what Matt Milano was. He didn't dress, but let's give him another week, and then those guys come back. So I agree. The thing about Bosa and Cook is, you know, they're both from South Florida, and, you know, I think that they would really love to play in this game. I'm not saying that's like the end-all, be-all, you know, decision, but I'm sure that they would love to be down there. By the way, the Dolphins, they will be without Rasul Douglas. That's just coming over. He will not be able to play in this game against his former team, the Bills.
Mm. And then, I mean, the other one to keep an eye on there is also Chop Robinson. We're talking about concussions with AJ Epenesa.
Yes.
Robinson himself as well.
Yeah, for sure. So yesterday, if you listened to Mike McDaniel, I went and listened and watched Mike McDaniel's press conference yesterday, and he kind of gave mixed signals on Chop Robinson, because he first starts talking about him like, there's no way, like, oh, I'm, you know, really, you know, what was the wording he used? I can't remember the exact wording, but I'm concerned about him and whatever. And that's great because, but it felt like he was like making it like, oh, wow, he could be out a while. And then at the end, when he finished kind of talking about him, he's like, yeah, we'll see where it goes this week. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so I don't know what the deal is with Chop Robinson. They don't have Jalen Phillips. They might not have Chop Robinson. Looks like Rasul Douglas, we know that now. He's not going to play. This is just announced by them. Their DC, Anthony Weaver, said it. I mean, this is an opportunity. The Bills need to go down there and just put their foot down on the Miami Dolphins. And you want to talk about managing injuries, guy? Load management? How about the Bills go down there and get a nice, comfortable lead
right
by halftime if they can and say, listen, third quarter, fourth quarter, we're going to start getting guys out. And I know that's, you know, it's easy to say here from my chair, right, from Studio Capaccio. I get that. But seriously, and it's not that easy, but I mean, that would be the best case scenario here.
It would be the best case scenario, Sal, especially because of the fact that, you know, you do want to make sure you get some load management. You get a chance to get some of these players off the field. I'm wondering how large the Hoyt injury is going to loom for this team because of the fact that, you know, they do have to sign Fedarian Mathis to the active roster. They're out of call-ups for him. They bring in Kingsley Jonathan on the practice squad. I'd imagine they'll start using those call-ups as well. But it is something where their depth is being tested, and yeah, they are doing everything that they can to fight it.
For sure. And one of the things that you know, Sean talked about yesterday, and even Brandon, is young players stepping up, right? Young players have to step up.
Yeah.
And I really, to me, you look right at a guy like Landon Jackson, and that's somebody they talked about. And I've been more of a, you know, Matt Bove and I had a really great discussion a few weeks ago, early in the season, on Landon Jackson and why he's not dressing. And, you know, Matt was very much like, oh my God, your third round pick's not dressing. Like, that's a problem. And I was more of a, well, it's early in the season, and, you know, it's not easy for guys to get a spot on this roster because the roster's good, and I'm not gonna judge him over three. I mean, AJ Epenesa wasn't getting a jersey early in his career either, early on. Like, every team is different, right? Every roster is different. We are now to a point where guys have, there's enough injuries on this team, and there's enough happening, and I'm not gonna say it has to happen this week because I still think that development means something. Look at Cole Bishop, right? I mean, like, I think, isn't Cole Bishop a great example of why we shouldn't be rushing to judgment about the development or lack of development for guys after 1 year, after whatever games? Like, come on. But that said, as this season goes on, guy, Landon Jackson needs to make a contribution, I think. Like, that they need to start getting something from that because they're gonna need more guys, and they're gonna need guys to contribute, these young players who are on this team. And, you know, again, let's go back to the Joey Bosa point. It can't just be Joey Bosa doing everything at defensive end. And AJ Epenesa is in concussion protocol now. Javon Solomon has to have a role here. Now, I'm going to put him in this boat, and he has been playing. But I need Javon Solomon and Landon Jackson at some point here to do something, to be a part of, you know, this Bills defense in some capacity to make a difference, an impact, whatever. They did just sign Kingsley Jonathan. Kingsley Jonathan's played pretty well when he's been on the Bills. He's actually, but, you know, he hasn't been called on a lot. But you know, that's a guy that they're going to add into this rotation at some point who knows the system. So it just shows you where they feel they are at the position.
We're going to take a quick time out here. Sal's going to be sticking with us here for another segment. I want to dive a little bit more into where the Dolphins are at, firing their general manager, keeping the coach, maybe keeping the coach long term. We'll see. That might put a kibosh in some of my plans for the offseason, but we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, along with Sal Capaccio here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is WGR. Wrapping up hour number one here on a beautiful Thursday morning. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, and still on the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio. Bills getting ready to take on the Miami Dolphins down in South Florida, a team that, Sal, it's almost surprising they didn't do, I mean, they have an interim GM, so I guess it's not that surprising, but you would have thought they would have done something like the Jets did, where let's accumulate a ton of picks, this era didn't work, and let's start over where we can instead. I mean, guys like Bradley Chubb are still on the roster.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, let me correct myself. My apologies. I misread one of the Dolphins beat reporters, Barry Jackson, does a great job. He wrote what they were saying was Anthony Weaver said, if Rasul Douglas doesn't play, here was the plan.
Got it.
My apologies for that. I don't know for sure if Rasul Douglas is or isn't playing. I thought it said Rasul Douglas isn't playing.
Got it.
He wrote, if Rasul Douglas isn't playing, is what he wrote. If he can't play. Anyway, that said, it would be, they're going to really dip into their secondary and the depth.
They have been all year, Josh Allen,
if that is the case, right? So we'll see. I'm going to go with the first part of what you said and think it's that way, which is interim GM, I'm surprised they didn't do more. Here's why. Why did they fire Chris Greer before the trade deadline? The reason, right, to me, you fire the GM before the trade deadline is you don't want him to have those emotional attachments to guys, mm-hmm, that he drafted or signed to not trade them. And then the owner goes, hey, I got a new guy in here. I need him to make the best decision for the Dolphins and the roster, not have any clouded judgment or vision. That's why you do it. That's the timing, right? Otherwise, why fire Chris Greer right before the trade deadline? Just doesn't make sense to me. So I was surprised they did trade Jalen Phillips. We'll see about Chop Robinson today, as far as, you know, if he is practicing. He's in concussion protocol. They are a rudderless ship right now, it feels like. And it's gotten worse before it's gotten better for, mm-hmm, the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. It might even get more worse than it does get better. They're now, for the first time, I mean, I know this has been percolating, but really, for the first time, there are serious questions about the quarterback and if they have the right quarterback. And then if they don't have the right coach, that even doubles down on if they have the right quarterback, right?
Oh, yeah. So rudderless is how I'd put them. I'm surprised McDaniel still has a job. I can understand the sentiment, though, of let's just let him ride out the season, then we'll fire him and we'll start from scratch at the offseason where we can kind of do everything.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus free professional installation right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1. It's $15 a month. 2. Seriously, it's $15 a month. 3. No big contract. 4. I use it. 5. My mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I can understand that. Sal, I will tell you. Personally, between us, you know, it's just me and you talking here, I think Joe Brady is going to be leaving the Bills at the end of the season. I think there's too many jobs that are going to be out there, both with college and the NFL. I think he's built up a good reputation amongst the NFL. And if the head coaching job comes up, whether it be at LSU or Tennessee Titans, I think he's going to take it. So I, in my, you know, way, am always somewhat looking to the future. Who's going to be the next OC? And I know a lot of Bills fans get frustrated that McDermott is a defensive coordinator and that they can't have the OC coach with Allen the rest of his career. I think the perfect fix for that is a guy like Mike McDaniel, who will have to take years probably to rebuild that reputation to be an offensive coordinator or to be a head coach again. I think he might be a perfect if they want to go that route, an OC for the Bills. I am partially hoping the Dolphins do fire him so the Bills can bring him in.
I'm going to completely disagree with you.
I thought you would. I was very scared to bring it up. I thought you would. It's okay.
That's okay. That's what we do. I mean, you could be 100% right. And maybe we're sitting here 6 months from now, and or whatever months from now, and maybe, you know, Mike McDaniel's fired and he becomes the Bills OC. I don't know. I think the shine on Mike McDaniel has worn off. It's a great offense in the first month and a half when it's warm weather. And then you get to December and they can do nothing. And it's not just the quarterback. To me, it is not. Look at where he came from, too. It is a Kyle Shanahan type of offense where you just need these like game manager guys and quarterbacks to fit into a system. What happened when the 49ers went out and got who's the big quarterback they drafted a couple years ago? Trey Lance. And I know he got hurt, but it was never a fit. I think that's a bad fit. We got a jolly Josh Allen who you want to have as this big stud quarterback. That's not what he does. Plus, I'll be honest with you, I watch Mike McDaniel in press conferences, and I'm going to here to tell you, okay? I have a lot of respect for Mike McDaniel and his life journey. Mike McDaniel's been through a lot in his life, okay? Go read his backstory and then he's gone through and why he was out of football for a little while and stuff like that. I have so much respect for that man. I really do. But I watch him and I listen to him and I feel like he doesn't come off as quite the kind of leader that I think you need in those positions sometimes.
I think it's very fair. I now know where we're both like the line of demarcation for both of us, because I look at the Shanahan system and I'm like, if they gave Lance a shot, I think that was the thing. If he hit, that could put that offense over the top. And I just want to see one of the Shanahan coordinators have a great quarterback. It may be a complete disaster. I have no idea. And the Bills may think it is too.
I mean, he knows how to run the ball, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, right. That's his thing. They know how to run the ball. And, you know, that's what you do here in Buffalo right now very, very well. But I don't know. I just don't think it would be a great fit. But either way, hey, we don't know if Joe Brady is going to be the OC of the Bills next year if he goes somewhere else. So I guess that's a topic and discussion for another day anyway.
LSU. I got a feeling there. I mean, once the governor got involved, I'm like,
is the governor going to make the hire? He's going to call Joe Brady?
Might be LSU. We do have Thursday Night Football tonight. Denver and the Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
Denver is a team. I know the Bills are going to be playing the Bucs next week, and that's going to be a great game and fun. Of course, we're going to be covering it. But, man, I am going to be staring at my phone as the second game with the Chiefs coming off the bye at Denver. That could be such a crucial game for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, there are some sneaky, really good games this weekend, to be honest with you. I was just looking at the schedule. I mean, Raiders-Broncos tonight. Nobody really expects the Raiders to beat the Broncos, but they can play with some teams. And, you know, they're kind of hot and cold. They only have two wins, but it's a divisional opponent. The Broncos, speaking of hot and cold, they always start cold on offense. You have the Raiders get a little jump on them, but, man, Thursday night, quick turnaround in Denver. Probably not going to go their way. And honestly, don't Bills fans want Denver to keep winning winning the one seed?
Correct.
You want them to, right, keep winning and keep Kansas City back. But Falcons at Colts this weekend, right? That's an interesting one with the Falcons, a team that you know they can win games. They beat the Bills. They should have beaten the Patriots, it felt like, last week.
And that's in
the
Germany,
Colts,
too.
After that performance the other day against the Steelers and now Sauce Gardner there. How about no CJ Stroud for the Texans, who desperately need a win, but they're 3-5 right now. Ravens Vikings is really interesting, right? For Lamar against that defense. And then Patriots Bucks, man, we're going to be dialed in on that while the Bills are playing. Patriots Bucks, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will have a big say in what happens in the AFC East over the next couple of weeks. They play the Patriots, then they play the Bills. And as it right now, I'm looking, still no Bucky Irving. What is going on with that guy?
I know,
still hasn't played, right? It's weird.
Cause,
he's been out for quite a while now, but no Chris Godwin yet, but on the Patriots, no Keyshawn Booty and no Ramondre Stevenson, apparently.
Yeah, so a lot of teams dealing with a lot of injuries. This is not just a Bills problem.
Oh, and Steelers-Chargers, by the way. That's your Sunday night game.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that uniform combo might be a disaster. I don't know. That might be tough. We'll find out.
That's unfortunate.
We'll find out. All right, Sal, we'll let you get out of here. You've got the show tomorrow, and then what's coming up for the rest of today?
Yeah, for sure. So practice today. Keep it locked in to WGR550.com. We'll have the injury report later. Of course, at Sal Sports on social, on X. And then tomorrow, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, just about 24 hours from now, a little after that, we should have head coach Sean McDermott and a very important injury update for Sunday. in Miami, South Florida, where the Bills and I will be traveling down. And guys, it looks like it's probably going to be a low 80s chance of rain.
Low 80s chance of rain. Love it. Yeah. All right, Sal, we'll let you get out of here and we'll talk
again
soon.
Put that on repeat, like if you just hit the button all over again, right? All the time for South Florida, yeah.
Low 80s chance of rain. Love it. All right, buddy, we'll talk again soon.
You got it.
All right, thanks, Sal. Sal Funchio there on the Western Hotline. We have got to run. We are late. Paul Hamilton coming up at 11:30. This is WG.
Microscope is on Keon. I get it. Like, he's drafted high second round, and so you're naturally going to put a lot of pressure on him. You know, I would say there's been some good things, and there's things he can continue to do better. I think he has taken another step this year. That doesn't always show in targets or production, things like that. There's a lot of different things, whether what he's being asked to do. He's playing within the offense. I think he has shown maturity of how he can help our offense even away from the ball and in the run game and things like that. But I think he's catching the ball well. I think there's times he's been open, but the ball doesn't come to him, which is it's no shot on. Sometimes that's the progression of that route too. And he wants the ball. He wants his opportunity. He's working hard. He's not complaining. Receivers, tell me a receiver that doesn't want the ball, you know.
That is a Buffalo Bills general manager, Brandon Bean, from yesterday, talking about his second-year receiver, Keon Coleman, who, for being honest, since week one, has really not impressed at all in the receiving game. Been pretty good blocker. I think that much is for sure. That much is the case.
You take a tight end in the sixth round for your blocking.
Yeah,
I mean. You take a wide receiver in the second round, not for blocking.
I think we're getting to a point. I don't even think for fans. I got to imagine there's people internally there with the Bills that are about done. Week one, 11 targets, 8 receptions, 112 yards, and he does get that deflection touchdown that really allows for the comeback to happen. Much of that is done in the fourth quarter. After that, 3 for 26, 3 for 20, 3 for 45, 4 for 23, 3 for 11, 3 for 30, 2 for 17. He does have another touchdown in there against New England. He does have a score, but it's just his yards per reception are under 10 yards. The success rate, I believe, is around 60%, 65%, excuse me. They're just not getting enough at all out of a receiver that they did pick in the second round. And it's not to say that Worthy would be world's better, Xavier Leggett, anything like that. Ladd McConkey is kind of the name I've gone to now. Right. I was not a McConkey guy that draft.
But McConkey was also a slot receiver. They knew right. That they weren't taking him. Worthy,
dude, they've wanted to make an outside.
Worthy is a straight line merchant. I said what I said.
That seems to kind of be the case. I still think he's dangerous because of the speed element. Like he forces teams to really pay attention to him. You saw it on the Mahomes pick. You saw it even when Hairston was on him. Like, I mean, Hairston's got to be on him because even a straight line when he's that fast, it's a problem. Coleman's size can also be a problem. I think what's funny is between Worthy and Coleman, it right now is a mid-off.
Yeah.
Neither of them are really all that special. They have an elite trait that could make them special. Coleman is 6'4", 211. Worthy is super fast. But right now, just looking at Coleman, I understand why the reports were that they were looking for a receiver. Jeremy getting to the point where maybe they were targeting Brian Thomas Jr. or even, you know, from Bean mentioning the Jets and the Dolphins, two teams that have Garrett Wilson and Jalen Waddle could be those moves. It's because the guy that drafted in the second round in his second year is not doing anything really.
And I think there's a little bit of a misuse going on with him as well, because Joe Kelly and I talked about this off air a couple times, where Joe brings it up that the gauntlet drill. Why are you not putting him over the middle of the field? Where was he making his big play elements happen last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the middle of the field, quick outs to him and let him get running.
He was surprisingly adept at breaking tackles and shaking people. That's what you should be doing with him. Give him that opportunity. Give him a chance to exploit the middle of the field, because he's got the size advantage there too. Like, it exists on the boundary. It exists in the middle of the field, probably even more so. It just, there's a misusage, I think, going on with Coleman that is undermining his effectiveness. And yet there's a number that's still fascinating to me. You know how, like, yesterday, I believe it was. Yeah, it was yesterday when Jeremy brings up Khalil Shakir, the yards after catch with his total yards.
Yeah.
It is the polar opposite with Coleman. 50 yards are after catch.
Oh, wow.
The number that I'm fascinated with, though, is 19. 19 out of 29. That's how many of his receptions have gone for first downs.
Yeah, so when he catches the ball, it usually winds up being a first down.
It's important places where he's catching the football. So I am interested in that because even with his struggles this year, he's tied for the team lead in moving the chains.
I think he's also tied or even just ahead of how many snaps he gets on the offense for the receivers.
Yes.
He's been leading that the last few weeks. Look, there are positives to Coleman, and I was somebody that was very excited going into his second year because I thought there was a few games last year that pointed to, hey, there's something here, but he's not getting open at all at a consistent rate, not even at all. The first down stuff is great. I love that. But it's like one or two catches a game. He's not demanding a volume. And so when you do – look, this is something I will take into the offseason too. Hearing the general manager talk about how they were looking at some big deals and to kind of point it to wide receiver. Hearing the head coach for a few weeks talk about how he's not really that thrilled with the passing game. I think a lot of it points to Coleman has not developed into the guy we needed him to be. And so now we are looking at different avenues. If they don't make a big trade in the offseason for a receiver, I think early – they're going to go for wide receiver because we're also seeing, too, some of these young guys that maybe they'd have to fill in other positions. They don't. Cornerback, they might be good. They might be done there in terms of the early rounds. Defensive tackle, they might be done there for a little while. And edge rusher, depending if they bring back Bosa and Epinesa, they might be done there as well. So that's the defense. What do you need on offense? Depends on where you sign your offensive lineman. Center and guard is going to be potentially two with McGovern and Edwards. Then very quickly it's, okay, it's wide receiver. You're up. And this class went from being not the best, and you're looking more towards 27, to halfway through the year. It's kind of the opposite of the quarterback class.
I was just going to bring
it up. It's now actually one where it's a little exciting. There's a few guys from USC. One I love who is not going to be available at all. Jordan Tyson out of Arizona State. He looks incredible. Tate out of Ohio State looks phenomenal. And he might be somebody that is available in the late teens to 20s. We'll see about that. I mean, we're well away from the draft. But I think that, look, that's why all of us bring it up all the time. They're not getting great production out of their wide receivers. This offense is run through their tight ends and their running backs. And their quarterback is an MVP caliber player. And it works. It's not that it's bad. It works. The problem is it could be better. It could be more efficient. They could be harder to defend so that maybe someone like a James Cook even gets more running lanes because, well, you got another guy on the outside that's a huge problem. That's where it comes in is it becomes even easier for them to do stuff. It already looks at times very easy where they are just able to go up and down the field when they are clicking. It can be even more so. It can get to a point where there's just so few teams that have the personnel to defend them. Dan Orlovsky, I heard speaking yesterday on this, looks at the Colts now. Because of the addition of Sauce Gardner, they are built in the secondary on defense to stop teams like the Chiefs and like the Bills. You counteract that by having better receivers. Now all of a sudden, Gardner can only stick on one guy. Bills right now, I mean, if those two were to meet in the playoffs, division around, AFC Championship, what have you, who's Gardner going to go sit on? It kind of doesn't matter.
Hang on. And yet it does. This is where the Bills can get a little tricky this year. Who is the biggest threat in the Bills receiving game?
Kincaid.
Are you putting a corner on Dalton Kincaid? Are you putting Sauce Gardner on Dalton Kincaid?
Probably not.
There you go. There's your counterpunch.
Right. I mean, that is your counterpunch. The problem is we've talked about Kincaid not on the field in an incredible amount.
An incredible amount, but he's been efficient when he's been on the field. So yeah, maybe you could roll some coverage over there because now you've got Sauce able to play on an island with whoever they put out there at the X. And yet it seems like Kincaid has shown that that doesn't matter. The counterpunch is there, and I don't want to call Kincaid Travis Kelce. I'm not going to do that. What I am going to do, though, is give a similarity to how the Chiefs succeed in the postseason. Because NFL defenses seem to routinely forget that Travis Kelce exists.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a bit of a problem.
And it more has to do with, well, you also still have to be able to cover the middle of the field, and your slot corners are not typically as effective as your boundary anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Your linebackers are not going to be as good in coverage as your top corners anyway. That's just football. Can the Bills get away with having Kincaid incredibly efficient and fresh with his snaps? Well, it looks like it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, really. So he
plays 35% of the snaps, and he has 6 receptions for 101 yards.
Yeah, he starts the year off. I mean, it's a good run with Baltimore, 4-for-4 for 48 and 1 touchdown. Has a few okay games here. Miami's 5 catches, 66 yards, and a touchdown. I think up to that point, we all thought that was maybe his best game. Then he's kind of non-existent really against New Orleans. Doesn't really need to be. And then all of a sudden, 6-for-6 against New England for 108.
In a game where he gets injured, by the way.
Yeah, nothing against Carolina really, 3-for-1 for 23. And then he has, I think, his best game up to this point. 6-for-101 and 1 touchdown in the win against Kansas City. He was dominant there. I'm still leaning more towards wanting him to have having more of the snap count. It has gone down, actually, as the year has gone on. Since week 3, the only time he went over 50% was against New England. He was at 54, where you know his best games have actually been closer to 40-ish. Percent of this offensive snaps. I'd like to see more. I'm not saying I need him on the field 75% of the time.
That might also be they're taking their time bringing him all the way back from the oblique injury.
Could absolutely be that.
Because that's a core injury. That's a core muscle. Carolina, that stat line, they obviously don't need him.
No.
But I look at the other two games that surround it. New England, where mm-hmm. he gets hurt, and Kansas City. And then I look at Miami, a game where you did really need everything that you got out of that. Each of those three games, it's 6 targets. It seems like he is consistently part of the offense when they need him. That New Orleans game, they don't really throw into him that much, but he's the one that puts it away.
Mm-hmm.
They throw it in his direction only 2 times.
Yeah, the one catch he has is a 28-yard touchdown. They really dive. I think for me now, I personally have moved on from Coleman.
Kincaid that
I know we're
the
halfway
guy.
Through year two, but he's not showing anything. It really doesn't look like he's developed much from his rookie year, where Kincaid, it looks different. And now him and Allen do seem to have a connection, where last year that was the worry. It was not that Kincaid wasn't getting open. There were multiple times he's open, Allen's got to hit him.
And it's the quarterback not hitting the player.
Now we're seeing it with Kincaid. Okay, now he's hitting him. The health thing is always still a little bit of a worry. That was my issue last year, too, is it's just I don't like the chemistry and he's not staying healthy. That's not a good sign for me at all. It's kind of where I'm not the biggest fan of Gabe Davis really being back. We'll see how that goes, and you'll probably get elevated at some point here. But the chemistry in the last year with Allen and Davis was not good, and it did not make me long for the AFC divisional game 13. It didn't. I was ready to move on. Kincaid, though, at this point, I think has developed into effectively their number one, and he's doing it well. Again, I'd like to see the offensive snap percentage go up. We'll see if it does as he gets healthier as the year goes on. But they can survive with this. They can win with this. They are. They're 6-2. Very good chance they'll be 7-2 after this. You got a game against Tampa. That one's going to be tough. That's where this Bills team, I guess, for many is so frustrating, is it does feel like, man, you had one more piece here. One other guy just doesn't get hurt. And you might be ready-made. Let's go. Get after it. And that's where I do look at the draft and go, they're not going to have a ton of needs. It's going to be like linebacker, maybe an offensive lineman and wide receiver. You know, depending on safety with Hancock and the Bishop role, that they might kind of push that to the side.
I would still say they probably would want to add to the reinforcements on that one because
but
the last few years, they haven't even been able to bring in a player to overcome Hamlin.
That's been the problem the last 2 years.
So, yeah, you probably want on the depth chart to do better than Damar Hamlin anyway, add a reinforcement there. But that would be later.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a primary focus for you at that point. And if you can find your way, though, the biggest thing we have worry-wise with the Bills is it sustainable through January? Is it sustainable through the playoffs, right? And yet everything that the Bills do does seem like it should fit in December with being able to run the football and do it so effectively. And yet it just doesn't end up happening, in particular against one team. That one team did not defend the run particularly well in this game. And they're kind of middle of the pack at doing it. It's just more proof that, yeah, you could do it. This team has been good. They've always been good. They're 6-2, which is one of the top records in the AFC for a reason.
Yeah, they're still battling for the one seed. Thank you, Colts, for losing.
Yeah, thank you, mid-Steelers.
I mean, like, that's ultimately the problem, and we talk about it all, but then the season is long. We get one game a week, so we all gotta have to linger. We all have to take a bath in it.
Right.
They are still a very good team. Looking around the rest of the NFL, it's now kind of commonplace to say there's not really a great team, especially in the AFC, but maybe the entire league. What makes me excited, and maybe bringing Wynn back into my sales a little bit here after the Hoyt injury and not doing anything at the deadline, is the young players are starting to really put their stamp on the season with Harrison and Deion Walker. Cole Bishop is still a young player. It's his second year. We'll see about Landon Jackson. Sal mentioned it with us too, like within the injuries. You're going to see him soon. TJ Sanders, we'll see if he comes back. And I'll throw Kincaid in there with the young players. It's his third year, and he has taken a jump. I mean, something I didn't even mention either. His yards per target has skyrocketed. It was at 6.0 last year. It's now at 12.5. His yards per reception is up a full 5 yards. That's why last year, Derek, he had 44 catches for 448 yards. This year, he has 27 catches for 411 yards. He also has 4 touchdowns, equaling his career total through 2 seasons. Like they're seeing these young guys start to come, and now you just hope Ed Oliver is able to come back from his injury in the playoffs and what have you, and that they are able to kind of just coalesce a little bit here and not pick up more injuries. We'll see about today when McDermott, or not when McDermott speaks, but when the official injury report does come out later. They're still a very good team. And I think they can kind of play with everyone in the NFL over the last 2 weeks that I've seen. I will tell you, before the bye, I did not think that. The last two weeks, I do believe that.
The good news, though, is like while we haven't seen much from Coleman this year, there is something that Coleman did last year that Kincaid has taken the mantle of. The big play guy. Kincaid has taken over as the big play guy. In all but one game this year that he's played in, there's a reception for over 20 yards. He is literally the big play element consistently every week.
Yeah, I mean.
And then against the Falcons, where you're having trouble moving the football, boy, it would really help to have a guy that flips the field.
Yeah, you bring that up. You're right. I mean, yards per reception for Coleman last year was 19.2. This year it's 9.8.
So it is about who's your big play guy this year? And the answer is different from last year. Disappointingly so on one end of that, encouragingingly for another.
803-0550, the number to call. We do have a Sabres game tonight. They are taking on St. Louis. We do have a few roster announcements for tonight, or at least roster projections for tonight. Namely, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen looks to be the starter in net tonight. We'll talk with Paul Hamilton coming up next. Get more on tonight's game as the Sabres hopefully don't go to overtime again. Or if they do, win one. That'd be really
Please
cool.
Please, no.
Yeah, win one if you go to overtime. That would be really cool. Again, the number to call, 803-0550. Paul Hamilton on the way next. This is WGR. Hour number two rolls along here on a Thursday. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. Before we get to Paul Hamilton, ready to take your game day to the next level, enter online now at WGR550.com for a chance to win a $300 tailgate tray certificate from Alibaba Kebab to feed 12 football fans. Each Friday, a winner is going to be announced during Football Friday with Shobin the Bulldog. Fire up your taste buds at any of their 3 locations. Sabres in action tonight, 7 p.m. puck drop, 6 p.m. pregame right here on WGR. They're taking on St. Louis. Not a good team.
No.
St. Louis has not had a good start to the year at all. I think also, did they play last night? They did. They lost 6-1 to the Capitals, so they're on a back-to-back as well. I'm not saying must win. I'm not going to say that. It's still early in the season. However, they are 4-8-2 on a back-to-back. Be nice to be 6-4-4 after tonight.
Yeah.
I think especially with how clustered the East is, and we've mentioned this, like, I don't want to sound hypocritical. They are picking up loser points. They're continuing to stack points. That is a positive. But you have to start picking up wins. You have to go on runs here. And teams are injured. Teams are injured all the time in the NHL and still are able to survive and pick up wins and what have you. The big guys got to come to play. Tuck, Thompson, Dahlin.
Yes.
There does have to come a point here where it starts to get going. We've mentioned Dahlin, too, the personal stuff with him, and yes, that is a big part of it. Thompson and Tuck, though.
There's actually reasons for you to be performing better than you are. Tuck is looking for a new contract. Thompson probably wants in on the Olympics after being a miss and a snub for the Four Nations face-off. There's actually pretty high motivation for you to be playing better, and you're not. And it's kind of getting a little frustrating. The other thing is that the injuries have taken a toll on the depth of this team finally, to a point where it is hard to see where the scoring's coming from if the big guys don't get moving. Josh Doan has kind of sat still now. He's at 9 points, but like it's a little bit slower going. Jack Quinn, same player. A guy who I've had fun watching as of late, but over the last few games, he only has one assist in here. So like we need something a little bit more there on Jack Quinn.
Rather than just flashy plays that look cool.
It's good to see him confident in his skates again, though. That is something that's genuinely good. He makes a terrible read defensively in overtime, and he should wear that. But your depth players like Yuri Kulik or Jason Zucker, those are players that have been able to chip in for you. Nope, they are both sick. Zach Benson in a walking boot. He's fourth on this team in scoring.
Yep.
And it's to a point where, like, all right, it's getting a little annoying seeing how frequently the injuries are coming up here, because then you look over at the Bills and there's a laundry list there too. What? Who moved the vase that you're not supposed to break and then broke it? Who did it? Who broke the cursed item?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's definitely not working. You know who didn't do it though? Paul Hamilton. He's on the Wester hotline.
Morning, Paul.
Morning. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. So the Sabres in action tonight. They're taking on a team that was in action last night, losing 6-1 to Washington, St. Louis. Looks like Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's in net. So how are we feeling tonight?
Yeah, they've been pretty much going back and forth now for a bit. You can even trace it back to when Ellis got his game. You know, it's been pretty much a, you know, nobody getting the net. You know, on the 22nd, it was Ellis. On the 24th, it was Lyon. And then Luukkonen next night played in Toronto, and then Lyon took the next two, and then Luukkonen had that great game against Washington, then Lyon played, and now Luukkonen plays. So it's pretty much, you know, you go back to October 22nd, only one goaltender has played two in a row. And I wouldn't be surprised, especially if Luukkonen now puts in a good game, if you start seeing the two of them alternating.
Paul, I was just going to ask about that. Like, is there a plan at this point for this team with Colton Ellis? Because, you know, the fun idea here is, oh, man, the Ellis revenge game is not going to happen. That's unfortunate. But now it is looking like it is back to its two-goalie rotation. It's back to where we were all looking at it to be before the season. Is there a plan for this team with Colton Ellis, and what would you do?
Well, I probably would have played him tonight.
You also like fun.
I mean, Luukkonen came into the year as your number one goalie. So if he starts playing well like he did the other night and stood on his head to win in a shootout, then, you know, I think they're looking at maybe he's the number one goalie again, or at least close to it, 1A and 1B. And so I don't think they had planned on alternating before Luukkonen got hurt. I think their plan was Lukanen's number one guy and Lyon is the number two guy. Then it's like, well, how long is Luukkonen going to be out? This is his second injury now. What do we do when we like Ellis? So let's go get Ellis. And I don't think they like him any less. And you look at the goaltending of the St. Louis Blues right now, one is a 5.02 goals against and the other is a 3.34. You know, so, you know, I don't think there's any question they reclaim him if he goes on waivers. So it just depends how much the Sabres want to keep him, you know, and what are their plans for Levi? And if they want to keep him, then their plans for Levi is probably to get rid of him, you know, at some point. So, and you would think the way injuries have been going for this team that they're going to be injuries. And Kevin Adams revealed on NHL Network yesterday something I've been suspicious of the whole time. I don't think Ellis is totally healthy yet, and he said he's been dealing with back spasms. So he's been practicing, and if you had to play him in a game, you could, but there's no need to. You don't have to, you know, so why not wait until he's totally over the back spasms? So I've been thinking that all along, especially when you wanted to give Lyon a night off and you had him back up Luukkonen. Because now you're risking him getting into the game if Luukkonen gets hurt or if it goes wrong. Now Lyon's in the game, in a game that you wanted him to rest in. So that's what really made me suspicious on Ellis, that he's not all the way back yet. Because if you want Lyon to get a night off, you give him the night off and let Ellis back up.
That does put an interesting little wrinkle into it, Paul, that back injury or the back spasms that he picked up that weekend with Toronto. Paul, you heard the audible reaction when you read off the goals against averages of Jordan Binnington and Joel Hofer. Binnington played last night. I'm imagining they're going to get Hofer, who's rocking an .836 save percentage and a .502 goals against. If they can't score tonight, I know it's the depth being questioned, but the top guys – this is an opportunity for a get-right game.
Yeah, well, this is the second-worst team in the National Hockey League right now. So, and they just got waxed in Washington, which probably isn't a good thing. I mean, yeah, it's a good thing you're getting them back-to-back. But these are professional athletes that should have some pride. And they did not play well at all last night. Now, it's not an easy trek to the airport in Washington, so I would say the earliest anybody got to the hotel would have been 2 a.m. Now, they're not here right now with the morning skate, but then probably a little bit later. So, you know, they had the – and that's how they got the Capitals, too. Remember, the Capitals played at home on a back-to-back, and they had the same thing. And, again, I don't think the Caps were probably in their rooms before 2 a.m. And now the Caps hung in there, you know, with the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
And Luukkonen had to play a great game just to get the 2 points, you know, out of that one, and it came in a shootout. So you can't count on that definitely back-to-back is going to be a minus. It can be, especially if you jump on the team early. But St. Louis Blues are in the National Hockey League. I would think they have some pride, too. So I think you might get a better game out of them than Washington did.
Paul, we're through 13 games of the season. We've talked about this a lot, that they do look different from years past. And something me and you have talked about off and on air is the loser points. The Sabres have not had any issue picking those up this year. They have more overtime losses than anyone else in the East with 4. They have dragged a lot of these games to overtime. That seems to be their nightly occurrence now. What are you seeing, though, in these overtime losses, these 3-3? Because it just it's a thing with the power play as well. When they seem to have a man advantage, they have a difficult time. What about these 3-on-3 OT losses?
And that's what's gotten them into the race here. I mean, they're only 3 points out of third place in the division. They're 1 point out of the number 8 spot and 2 points out of the number 7 spot. You know, so, but they're also tied with the Islanders, the Blue Jackets, the Lightning, the Senators. Philadelphia has 15 points. Washington in the 8th spot has 15 points. Boston has 16 points. The Sabres do have 2 games in hand on the Bruins and 2 points behind. So, you know, so they actually do have a better points percentage than the Bruins do at 533 to 538. So it's just so close the way it's going. The Rangers, by the way, also have 14 points. So there's only one team underneath the Buffalo Sabres. And it's a 2-time defending Stanley Cup champion, Florida Panthers.
As everyone predicted.
The only ones that don't want to hang out with everybody.
Who also
15 points.
Are in last place in the conference at -7 in goal differential.
Which as everyone predicted.
And I know they're injured. I get it. I mean, 2 very, very good players are out of their lineup. And Florida's problem is the same thing Buffalo's problem is. They can't play on the road. They're 5-1-1 at home and 1-5 on the road. Buffalo is 0-2-2 on the road, and it's not going to get any easier in Carolina. They never win in Carolina, so let's just put it, I'd be shocked if they broke that streak in Carolina. But look at what they've done at home recently after losing the first 2. They're 5-0-2 in their last 7 home games. So they picked up points in all 7 games. That means out of 14 points, they've picked up 12 in their last 7 home games. And overall, in the last 10, they've only lost in regulation once. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, this is what we've been clamoring for how long, that they've got to start getting games to overtime. And they didn't do it in the first 3. And I remember bringing it up then that as poorly as they played in the first 3 games, all 3 games were basically 1-goal games coming down the stretch. Especially, you know, in the Montreal game, there was an even game. They played that better. But, you know, they didn't get any points out of that one either. But the Boston game is the one that sticks in my mind because they got killed in that game. They were by far the worst team. But yet, with the goaltender pulled, you're only behind 2-1. Puck goes in off a skate or something, you're going to get a point out of the game. You're heading to overtime with a chance for two. And you played that badly. Don't forget, Boston didn't score the empty net goal. There was 3 seconds left in the game. So, you know, to me, there were three opportunities there to get points, and they didn't get points in any of them. And then finally, they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And now, five games in a row, they've taken to overtime and gotten points in 9 out of 10 games. So they continue to do that. Get points in 9 out of 10 games. I don't think it's any question they'll be in the playoffs.
Yeah, Paul, when it comes to I feel like the Utah game was different than the others with the depleted roster, the way that they were outshot in the game. It did seem like one of those of like, okay, that's the kind of game where you stole a point. Can you try to get one more? 47 seconds later, it goes the other way. But, Paul, what I'm kind of getting fascinated about right now is Jack Quinn seems to trust his feet a lot more. It seems like he's comfortable after several years of injury. But Noah Ostlund, Isaac Rizain, Jack Quinn on that line probably looked like the most entertaining of the group the other night against Utah. And it is looking like, okay, good. It took a little while for Rizain and Ostlund, but they have their first career goals.
Yeah, three Amarks have their first career goals in the last week.
Right, because
the last time that happened, guys named Shmelik and Hemelev were doing it. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
But you got to be – I know you can't use injuries as an excuse, but you also have to be realistic here. And you said it. Ottawa was the better team that game by far. But the Sabres are without Benson, Zucker, Kulik, Norris, Danforth, Ellis – that's a lot, and Kozak. That's a lot of guys to be down, and a lot of key guys to be down. Benson and Norris were supposed to be on your top line. Kulik and Zucker are guys that can get onto your top line if the other two are hurt and are big contributors to your power play and other places. That's a lot of people out of your lineup. So that's a point where you say to yourself, or at least I say, good job. You played one of the best teams in the National Hockey League, who is just coming off a 7-game winning streak, and I think they maybe had lost two after that, but still have shown to be a very, very good team this year. And you figured out a way to get a point. That's what we talk about when we're talking about figuring out a way to get a point when you don't have your A game. Granato talked about it. Ruff has talked about it. We have talked about it. That's what good teams do. You know, when, all right, we don't have our A game tonight. You're not going to have your A game in all 82 games. But figure out a way to get a point when you don't have it. And that's what they weren't doing in the first three. They certainly did not have their A game in Boston, but the Bruins were begging for the Sabres to grab a point in that game, even though they were dominating it. So now the Ottawa game, I think, or the not Ottawa, the Utah game is a perfect example of they didn't have their A game. They basically had to ice a team that was half of the Rochester Americans, and they were able to find a way to get a point.
Paul, last one here. Jordan Greenway, he's been back for a couple games from not being able to play to start the season with injury. I do think it is a little dubious that he's been getting the top line minutes because of the fact that he didn't get a chance to play a preseason, and sometimes it looks like it's showing a little bit. Is there a little bit of an over-reliance on a veteran there to see if they could stabilize something while not touching that Tuck, Doan, and McLeod line?
He's been more physical than maybe I've seen in the past. I think you're not giving enough credit because you're not giving him enough credit for the little things he does.
Yeah.
I have never seen a guy that can force turnovers like he does for the Sabres in a long, long time. It's almost like he knows what they're going to do before they do. I've talked to Tage Thompson twice now about this year, and it was either last year or the year before. He loves playing with Greenway. He asks to play with him because of how he gets in on the forecheck to create, which helps create offense, because of the chaos he creates in front of the net, because of the turnovers that he can make the other team, and then the Sabres can turn and turn that into offense immediately into transition. He's been very good on the penalty kill so far. He's taken a couple of goofy penalties, which he's not the only one. And that's certainly something the Sabres have not gotten out of their system yet. But if I was going to say the bad part of his game so far is the goofy penalties. Is he going to be a 20-goal scorer? No. I'd be shocked if he ever got 20 in the NHL. But there are some other things that he does that really help the Sabres and should help the other guys. And Tage Thompson, I thought Tage Thompson was getting going when he scored 3 goals against the Leafs in 2 games.
Yep.
No, not happening. I mean, he only has 5. So he only has 2 goals other than those 2 games against the Leafs. So, you know, that's somebody they have to get going, and that's somebody that, you know, he has to figure out. He lost both his line mates in Norris and Benson, but he's played with Tuck before, and it seems like he's going to get Tuck again. If we go by the lines from yesterday's practice, McLeod is going to center Tuck and Thompson. Now, neither Tuck nor Thompson have played a lot of left wing. So we'll see how that goes.
It'll be interesting.
But Tuck and Thompson, as you know, have a good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
McLeod, I think, played a little bit with those guys, at least one of them last year, when he was bouncing around the lineup because of injuries. So as Ruff said today when we were chatting with him, that he goes, I'm not going to sit there and watch things go wrong and not do anything about it. I know people hate that he changes the line so quick. He goes, I had the lines change in a half a period the other night. He goes, and I don't care what people think. He goes, it's not working. Why wouldn't I change it? He goes, I'm not going to sit there and keep watching it not work. So just because it might start that way with McLeod, Tuck, and Thompson, he may not like it. He may not like what he sees. Now, you know, Coach Thompson, still, I mean, don't forget, he came from the St. Louis Blues. I think he liked St. Louis. I think he liked being there. I don't think he particularly appreciated being traded, to be quite honest with you.
Fair. Fair.
You know, so in 8 games against the St. Louis Blues, he has 3 goals, 4 assists, and 7 points. So, you know, he is, you know, showing the St. Louis Blues that, hey, maybe you should have held on. And the trade is a trade that both – Lindy talked about this yesterday. There's nothing wrong with a trade that both teams like. Of course, the Blues loved it when – Ryan O'Reilly gave them 2 excellent years, got the Conn Smythe Trophy, and helped them win a Stanley Cup. Now, they only got 2 years out of him because after that, he was back playing like he did with the Buffalo Sabres, underachieving. He was good with the Buffalo Sabres, but he showed us those 2 years in St. Louis what he could have been. And I always felt that way when he was here, and I always said that when he was here. There's more here. I know 55, 60 points is nothing to sneeze at, but he's better than that. And he showed us that he is for 2 years. And then that was it. And then he fell out of favor. And then the young players were told to stay away from him on the road. You know, and next thing you know, he wore out his welcome like he did in Colorado, like he did in Buffalo, and then he did in St. Louis. And now the trade basically is more towards the Sabres, you know, because Tage Thompson, I think, still has a lot of years ahead of him. So winning the Stanley Cup right there gives the Blues, even if that's the only good year he gave them, it's worthwhile. If the Sabres traded for a player that helped them for 1 year and they won the Stanley Cup with him, I think we'd all sit there and say that's a good trade, even if the guy stunk from there on out. He gave you that 1 year and he won you a cup. And that's what he did with the Blues. He gave him 2 years and won him a cup. But now in the overall picture.
Paul, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got to go, man. We got Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour.
We're going to talk until 1.
Paul, thanks so much for jumping on with us. We will hear from you, though, in the pregame at 6 with Chopin the Bulldog.
See ya.
See ya, Paul.
Paul Hamilton there on the Western Hotline.
We
got to
go.
We do have to go. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. This is WGR.
I said we got to go. We got to go. That's the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek and Zach, see ya.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free.
It's
talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus free professional installation right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Once upon a dismal day, Bob's ice cream van looked gloomy and gray. Although he had big ambitions, his socials lacked creative vision.
That bad?
Maybe vamp it up a tad?
I have an idea.
Bob launched Canva and got into gear.
Create the video in the vampire theme and make it the funniest meme.
It went viral. Bob's business, a revival. Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.